Hello and welcome to episode 128 of the Sea Control Podcast, hosted by the Center for International Maritime Security. My name is Matthew Marighi and I'm senior producer for Sea Control. On this episode, we bring you Bonnie Glazer of the Center for Strategic and International Studies to talk a bit about China's most recent maritime military activities and their ramifications for the United States. But just as important, this episode also marks the hosting debut for Mina Pullman, SimSec's Director of External Relations. She does a really great job interviewing Bonnie, and I know all of you out there are going to enjoy it. We will get started with this eye-opening interview after a brief word about our organization.
SimSec brings you the best content on maritime security, technology, history, and international affairs. Sign up to become a member today by visiting www.cimsec.org/about/membership. Join us today.
Hello, SimSec listeners. My name is Mina Pullman, and as SimSec's Director of External Relations, I have the honor of hosting Bonnie Glazer as our guest for this podcast. Bonnie is a Senior Advisor for Asia and the Director of the China Power Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, where she works on issues related to Chinese foreign and security policy. Bonnie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to focus today on potential areas of conflict between the U.S. and China, specifically in the maritime domain. To lay the groundwork for that conversation, I want to ask a couple questions first about your take on the Trump administration and how China is reacting to the new president. Early speculation of Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy emphasized that it will be transactional. Based on the signs so far, such as his meeting with Japan's Prime Minister Abe and call with Taiwan's President Tsai before his inauguration, and call with Australia's Prime Minister Turnbull last week, would you agree with this characterization? Is Trump's approach really that calculated?
Well, as a businessman, it does appear that President Trump is looking to make some deals with other countries. We don't know yet what kinds of deals that would be. But, of course, he has indicated, for example, that the One China policy that the United States has held for almost 40 years might be reconsidered unless the Chinese make some concessions in the area of trade. But as far as I know, we haven't started a dialogue with the Chinese yet. Maybe the Chinese will try to offer some things up in advance, but the Chinese have also told the United States, and they've said publicly, that the One China policy is non-negotiable. So I think that the premise of the Trump administration is that the Chinese can be influenced, that if the United States pushes back, stands firm in some areas, that the Chinese will just simply have to accept it. They'll have to adjust. Now, that is a hypothesis that really hasn't been tested. So whether we look at the South China Sea or Taiwan or other areas, we don't yet know whether an effort to try and establish maybe new red lines, which, for example, Secretary of State Tillerson, when he was having his confirmation hearings, suggested in the South China Sea that we might seek to deny access by China to some of its islands in the South China Sea. That could be a new red line. And so we don't know where there's going to be decisions that are going to be made to try and force the Chinese to change their position, or where the Trump administration is going to bargain. And I would say it's very early days and we just don't know.
I think it's safe to say that unpredictability will be a defining feature of the Trump administration's foreign policy. In light of this, how can China craft a sustained and constructive foreign policy towards the U.S.?
Well, I think that every country has to deal with a degree of unpredictability when they are going to be talking to the Trump administration, when they're making their own policy decisions. There is not a lot of certainty yet. And it may be that the Trump administration decides to maintain a large degree of unpredictability if it believes that that ambiguity serves its interest. I think as far as the Chinese are concerned, they are trying to convince the Trump administration to limit the ambiguity to areas that do not affect China's core interests. And, of course, at the top of that list of core interests is sovereignty and territorial integrity, which is why the issue of the One China policy is so sensitive for the Chinese. So I think that Beijing is trying to establish the opportunity to have an early in-depth conversation with President Trump. I think that they believe that a Sunnylands-type conversation where they can lay out their interest and try to engage in a one-on-one conversation between Xi Jinping and Donald Trump, that maybe they can establish some understandings early on. I don't know whether they will be able to achieve that goal. Right now, the first potential opportunity for Xi Jinping to talk with Donald Trump is likely to be at the G20 in the first week of July. So unless there is something that is arranged before then. But we are seeing phone calls that are taking place. China State Councilor Yang Jiechi has now talked with the National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn. We don't know what took place in that conversation, but I think that the Chinese are looking for greater certainty and trying to narrow this area of uncertainty and unpredictability.
Makes a lot of sense. Moving on to questions more directly focused on the maritime domain. In your commentary, Zach Cooper and Peter Dutton missed Chief Reef, President Trump's first phone op last November. You and your co-authors explained how regional observers will judge the Trump administration's willingness or unwillingness to accept risk in response to China's recent assertiveness based on where and when it conducts its first freedom of navigation operation in Asia. What message would conducting a naval operation that goes beyond innocent passage within 12 nautical miles of Mischief Reef send to China?
So to introduce some background here, the Obama administration did start in October 2015 to conduct freedom of navigation operations around the Spratlys and the Paracels, but this was not the first time. Apparently, there have been, even as early as 1997, there were some freedom of navigation operations in the Paracels. And it's important to make the point that the U.S. freedom of navigation program is, in fact, a global one. It goes back to the late 1970s. And it is intended to enforce freedom of navigation for all countries in the world. So to protect high seas freedoms that all seafaring nations have under the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. So when the Obama administration resumed these operations, there had been a hiatus of a few years where they had not been carried out in the South China Sea. So they were conducted two times in the Paracels and two times in the Spratlys. And in all of these cases, with the exception of the last one that was conducted, which was October of 2016, they were what we call innocent passage. And that means simply sailing in an expeditious and continuous manner through waters that are 12 nautical miles around a particular feature. Now, this is complicated by the fact that in the Paracels, the Chinese drew base points and baselines in 1996, and they drew what's called straight baseline. So they connected these 28 base points. And under UNCLOS, only an archipelagic state that is composed of islands can draw straight baselines legally. China's a continental state, and it illegally drew straight baselines. And inside these baselines, it essentially claimed an internal sea. And under UNCLOS, if you have an internal sea legally, if you are permitted to have one, then you are not, another country cannot sail inside those waters without getting permission first. The Chinese contending that they have a legal right to draw these strait baselines demanded that the United States and other countries ask for permission before entering this internal sea, and the Chinese demand, they believe that they have a right under UNCLOS to require every country that is sailing inside their territorial sea, whether it be coastal or around one of their land features, to get prior permission. The United States has a different interpretation, and some countries require notification but not permission, so there are different interpretations of what the provisions are under UNCLOS. So with that background, in the last Freedom of Navigation operation in October of 2016, the USS Decatur crossed these illegal strait baselines, and they conducted for the first time of the four total FONOPs that the Obama administration at least announced publicly in the South China Sea. They conducted a maneuvering drill. So this is an exercise that is demonstrating high seas freedoms. And, of course, the Chinese objected to that. So this was not innocent passage. It was not simply sailing in a continuous and expeditious manner. So why is this important? Because if the United States simply sailed through these strait baselines in the paracels and conducted innocent passage, that would signal an acceptance of China's unlawful strait baselines. The reason why Peter Dutton, Zach Cooper, and I are advocating conducting a FONOP around Mischief Reef is because in the July 2016 ruling by the Arbitral Tribunal under UNCLOS, it was found that Mischief Reef is a low tide elevation. That essentially means it's part of the seabed, so no country can have sovereignty over it, and it exists inside the 200 exclusive economic zone of the Philippines. So indeed, it belongs to the Philippines. Mischief Reef is one of the three land features that the Chinese have built out into a massive island, created military installations, including a 10,000-foot runway, and hardened aircraft shelters, anti-aircraft missiles, and other capabilities. So the United States, if it were to conduct a freedom of navigation around Mischief Reef, because Mischief Reef is not within 12 nautical miles of any other feature, which would affect legally how the FONOP would have to be conducted, but since it is not close to any other feature, if the U.S. simply conducted innocent passage through these 12 nautical miles around Mischief Reef, that would once again lend credibility and legality to China's claim. And of course, China has illegally occupied the feature to begin with. So this means that the United States, with any FONOP around Mischief Reef, would have to conduct some military activity. It could fly a helicopter. It could conduct an exercise of another kind. It could circumnavigate the feature, loiter within, not move expeditiously. So that's the kind of options that the U.S. has. The risks here are that the Chinese might respond. And perhaps the Obama administration did not conduct this particular FONOP because it worried about the fact that the Chinese might respond, might try to interfere with that kind of freedom of navigation operation. The Chinese could interfere by sending fighter aircraft and flying very low and dangerously, or they could use maritime militia or perhaps even naval vessels to try and block the United States or force the United States to leave the area. This could, of course, potentially lead to a confrontation or even an accident. And It appears, based on the nature of the FONOPs that the Obama administration did conduct, that one of the factors in the decision-making process was that the Obama administration wanted to minimize the potential for any confrontation with China. So it appears they were risk-averse. And I think that the Trump administration is going to approach this issue a little differently, that they might be willing to incur more risk. And by demonstrating to China that they are less risk-averse, they hope to strengthen deterrence. Now, this is still a logic that is yet to be played out as to how the Chinese will respond and indeed what the Trump administration's approach will be. But this will be, I think, from the Chinese perspective, a test of U.S. intentions and U.S. Operations in the South China Sea. They will be looking to see whether the Trump administration is going to act differently than the Obama administration did. And the Trump administration then will be looking to see how the Chinese respond to what they do. And this is a critical test, I think, of where the U.S.-China relationship will go going forward.
Moving to a different part of the same region, on January 11, China's Liaoning aircraft carrier sailed north through the Taiwan Strait after completing exercises in the South China Sea. Was this meant to be a signal, and if so, what? There was so much going on. What specifically was it a response to, and what message were they trying to convey with that?
Well, first we should say that the Liaoning aircraft carrier first went through the Taiwan Strait as part of an exercise in 2013, so this was not the first time. And preparing to conduct an exercise with an aircraft carrier, given the fact that the Chinese do not have much experience, a lot of work preparation went into that. And the Liaoning was operating in the South China Sea. There were flight operations that were going on. So the Chinese are trying to build their capabilities. And my guess is that maybe 5-6 months in advance, these preparations were really underway. It's doubtful that this exercise was substantially modified in reaction to anything that was happening in international politics at the time. That's my view. But it is nevertheless a useful signal and can be played that way. So the Liaoning heading back to Hainan Island from its exercise really had three options if they did in fact consider changing the route that they were going to take as they headed back towards China. They could have gone through straits in Japan or in the Philippines or through the Taiwan Strait. So they may or may not have decided initially to go through the Taiwan Strait. But my guess is that they're simply exploiting the opportunity to present it as a signal to Taiwan. And the reason would be that the Chinese are more concerned increasingly about Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen. She had a conversation with Donald Trump when he was just elected on the phone. That's the first time ever that a Taiwanese president has spoken on the telephone with an American president-elect, and that it was made, of course, very public. And the fact then that President Tsai traveled through the United States. In fact, when this transit of the Taiwan Strait took place, Tsai Ing-wen was in Central America and she transited through the U.S. And the Chinese are concerned about the potential for more cooperation between the U.S. and Taiwan, the possibility that President Trump could be emboldening Taiwan to challenge China's claim to sovereignty. So that would be the reason why they might have done that. I should note, however, that the Liaoning sailed on the Chinese side of the midline between between Taiwan and the Chinese mainland. It did not cross that center line. As I understand it, there were no flight operations that were conducted while it was transiting the Taiwan Strait. If that had happened, it would have been seen as far more provocative. And finally, I would add that three times prior to that transit of the Liaoning through the Taiwan Strait, there were Chinese bomber flights that took place around the South China Sea, but also circumventing Taiwan. And in my view, those bomber flights, combined in some cases with other aircraft, were probably intended to send a very direct warning signal to Tsai Ing-wen. And I view those with greater concern than the transit by the Liaoning through that strait.
Historically, China has tested incoming U.S. administrations with assertive operations. Do you think an assertive operation in the maritime domain, looking beyond the South China Sea, Taiwan Strait, considering maybe even the East China Sea, is such a contingency likely? If so, what form might it take? Is there anything the U.S. can do to deter it? And if it happens, respond to it. How should it respond to it?
It has been suggested, and I think many observers believe, that China has tested incoming administrations. In 2001, in the early days of the George W. Bush administration, there were aggressive intercepts that were being conducted by a Chinese pilot that ultimately resulted in a collision with an EP-3 aircraft and a forced landing on Hainan Island. And then in 2009, there was an early incident with a U.S. naval oceanographic vessel called the Impeccable, where there were various types of Chinese vessels that harassed the Impeccable and tried to convince the United States to reduce the intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance operations around China and to move those operations further away from China's coast. One possibility is that the Chinese do try to test the Trump administration. My guess is that given the fact that the Trump administration has signaled early on that it is going to get tough against China, and the fact that they have tried to introduce a lot of unpredictability into the future U.S. policy toward China, the Chinese likely see that there is a very high risk in testing the Trump administration because they could force this new administration to become even tougher, and they could even cause an early confrontation. So far, it is remarkable how restrained, how disciplined the Chinese have been, and not just in their behavior, but in their rhetoric as well. There have been very carefully worded statements coming from the Chinese Foreign Ministry, from the Chinese Defense Ministry, that reiterate China's principled positions on various issues. But there have not been very strong threatening statements or actions from the Chinese. And I think that they recognize that President Trump, if he is potentially seen as weak, that he may overreact and that this could create an outcome that the Chinese don't want to see. There's also the potential that in the past, some of these tests that took place in the George W. Bush administration and the Obama administration took place at a time pre-Xi Jinping, when the Chinese civilian control over all of the activities of the military were probably not as firm as they are today. And that's not to say that there are still some issues in which the military might do things that are not completely decided by the civilian leadership. I think we still do have some issues in civil-military relations in China. But it is clear that the coordination between the civilians and the military and the instructions by Xi Jinping to operators in aircraft and military vessels, particularly the instruction to avoid an incident with the United States, I think that that is quite clear. And so in the past, whereas some of these incidents that have taken place there has been speculation that maybe the top Chinese leader did not endorse that particular action at that particular time. I think that's less likely to take place now.
Thank you so much for your time today. I'm really excited to get this out to all of our listeners, and this was such an insightful conversation. Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Thanks for having me.